from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. Get ready for more power outages if you're a PG&E customer. The state's utility regulator yesterday approved PG&E's wildfire mitigation plan that calls for more power line shutoffs this season, including large transmission lines that bring power to areas that could be far away from the fire threat. But are there enough protections for people with chronic illnesses who rely on electric-powered medical equipment, for example? And will ratepayers have to pick up the tab for PG&E's state-mandated safety plan? We dig into these questions with two of KQED's resident PG&E watchers, Lisa Pickoff-White and Marisa Lagos. Lisa Pickoff-White is our data reporter and senior producer at KQED. Marisa Lagos is our politics correspondent and co-host of KQED's Political Breakdown podcast. Good morning, both of you.
Good morning. Good morning. We got a new title today, I guess.
Yeah, we'll add it to the mix of all the work that you guys do. Great work, by the way. Lisa Pickoff-White, so the news yesterday was that the governing body that regulates PG&E, the California Public Utilities Commission, went ahead and signed off on the strategies that PG&E says it will use to reduce wildfire risk. A lot of attention has been, of course, on these preemptive power shutoffs that PG&E says it will do to try to avoid fires that are sparked by its own equipment. How will these be done? How extensive will they be in scope? Talk to us about that.
Well, a lot of this is to be determined. And during the several-hour hearing yesterday, I think that's a lot of what the commissioner said as well. Some of this is new, some of this isn't, and we're going to see how it goes and iterate is something we heard a lot of. So San Diego Gas and Electric has actually been doing these kinds of shutoffs for years. They had a devastating and deadly fire more than a decade ago. And one of the things they really learned from that was to shut off power in areas that might have fires to help prevent sparking them. And something that they've shown is often that they're small and not for a lot of time. For instance, in 2/3 of shutdowns that San Diego Gas and Electric has done since 2017, they involved less than 1,000 customers. They did have one larger shutoff that was 25,000 people. A lot of people may remember the shutoff up here by PG&E last year, which also was for the tens of thousands of people. These shutoffs can range from 60 seconds to even 6 full days. But at the end of the day, the utilities are the people who are calling the shots. They are the ones who will decide whether or not to turn off your power. And this is something now that all utilities are going to do. PG&E has come under criticism for not shutting off the power. And then they've also come under a lot of criticism when they do shut off the power, especially for people who are disabled. And we heard from a lot of those people yesterday as well.
So it sounds like these new outages then will be potentially longer and over and affect a larger number of people. What has PG&E done to help those who rely on things like breathing equipment and other life-saving medical equipment if they are forced to confront with a blackout?
Well, right now, PG&E is asking people to sign up so that they can receive early alerts that their power might be shut off. But what will PG&E do for you specifically? That's a question the utility is really yet to answer. SDG&E is floating an idea of actually starting a grant program to help people buy generators and things like that. And I've certainly actually started seeing a lot of billboards and advertising popping up in the Bay Area of people trying to sell me generators or other things like that. I think as the utilities are kind of pushing out this messaging.
So many questions, so much power in the hands of PG&E, Marisa Lagos. Do you think the CPUC, the Public Utilities Commission, has the backbone to step in when they don't think that this plan or that PG&E is carrying it out in a way that will truly benefit safety?
I mean, I have a hard time believing that long term the CPUC is going to keep the sort of sole power that they have over this. A commission that was created by legislation last year just put out a draft report this week. And one of the things they're calling for is sort of a new body to oversee utility electrical risk, and not just for the big utilities we're talking about, but for all of them, because there's a ton of smaller power providers, public power providers around the state. And I think that it's entirely likely that we could see further legislation around how these shutoffs should sort of be monitored. I talked to Senator Bill Dodd, who represents Napa. His district burned in 2017 in the Atlas Fire. And then in 2018, they saw one of these preemptive shutoffs, one of the first ones. There was a lot of blowback, and it wasn't just his district. It was 60,000 people over, I think, 4 counties. But Calistoga got hit really hard. And then a couple of days later, the campfire broke out. And I think that did change some people's minds about sort of their anger. But when I asked Dodd, like, do you have concerns about whether we should trust PG&E given their history going back to the San Bruno explosion through the last few years of fires? He said, no, you have to be crazy to trust them to make these calls. And I think that that is sort of indicative of the feeling in Sacramento that they sort of did as much as they could last year creating the legislation that required these plans, but they don't feel like they're done. And I think that that, you know, I certainly, as somebody who's been watching this utility for a long time, have really big questions about why we should sort of trust them to make these calls. Because to Lisa's point, it's not just about did they, you know, are they making the right call that they should shut off the power? Sometimes it's a question of are they being overly cautious? And I know the PUC said this should be a last resort. But when you see something like Paradise, I think there's a real incentive on the part of utility managers to be, you know, overly careful. And I think that in some ways that makes sense. But in other ways, you know, obviously, people who could be put at medical risk are the biggest concern. But what about businesses? Like, if you're in, you know, Napa and you own a restaurant and they shut off the power for 2 days, PG&E's not going to pay for those losses.
We're talking about what's in PG&E's wildfire mitigation plan, sparked by the legislation that you actually brought up by Bill Dodd. It's a state mandated plan that was signed off on by the CPUC yesterday. And we're also talking about how you might be affected. Marisa Lagos of KQED is with us. She's our politics correspondent. And Lisa Pickoff-White, our data reporter and senior producer at KQED. Why should we trust PG&E with some of the power that they're being given? Lisa Pickoff-White is one of the questions. And what questions do you, our listeners, what do you have? What are your concerns? Call us at 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us, forum at kqed.org, or post your comments on Facebook or Twitter or on our website. Lisa Pickoff-White, what is PG&E saying is generally the ballpark that their safety plan is going to cost?
Well, they are estimating that it'll cost between $1.7 and $2.3 billion this year. And that is for vegetation management, people doing clearing trees. It's for inspections of lines, poles, transformers, all sorts of equipment. To PG&E's credit, they do have the largest, one of the most difficult territories in Northern California to monitor. However, a big question that people are raising is, how are those costs going to be passed on? Am I going to pay for it? Are you going to pay for it? Are shareholders going to pay for it? And what's made this all, Marisa's shaking her head.
I'm like, no, shareholders will probably pay for very little.
Right. Yeah. So doesn't Marisa Lagos, the CPUC, have the right to say that what PG&E has done either deserves or does not deserve to be paid back?
Yeah. And so that will be up to them. And I think that we will see those proceedings. They will be painful and long and in depth. And they will sort of have to go line by line and validate everything they've done and make the case to the CPUC. But I think that this brings up a broader question of who pays. And the bottom line is, you know, we haven't even mentioned that PG&E is in bankruptcy. So there's actually a court fight going on around who they owe money to and who gets paid for it and then who pays for that debt. And, you know, there's sort of two
and also
things.
How that plays into the larger concern that they're going to do whatever they can to limit their own liability going forward, as opposed to essentially maybe trying to think about the safety of
Consumers. And I think that this brings up there's sort of a couple questions here. One is, if PG&E has not done the work in the past that they said they were doing and that ratepayers paid for to upkeep these lines, then obviously we should not have to pay for that work twice. On the other hand, you know, ratepayers fund the utility. That's how it works. And they borrow money to do these infrastructure costs. And it's our system. So there's an argument that we should be paying for a lot of this, right? If they have not, if they haven't done a good job of investing in the past and we've been paying lower rates because of that. I think what's going to be really interesting is this liability question. And I think for a long time in Sacramento, there's been a sense that they don't want to give PG&E a win by changing the very strict liability standard in California, which essentially says the utility pays if they cause damage, even if they didn't act negligently. And that is fairly unique to California. It's one of the reasons, arguably, that PG&E ended up in bankruptcy, because Wall Street has been so concerned about how much they might pay out for these fires. And this commission created by the legislature is floating the idea of changing that standard. And I think that that is a conversation that the legislature does not want to have again, and they're going to have to. Because what they're basically saying is that the current standard actually incentivizes people outside of the utility, like homeowners, to engage in risky behavior that then we all pay for as ratepayers. And so I do think that there's a weighing here, and we should remember that, yes, the utilities have sparked these fires, but some of the reasons that they have been so devastating aren't just climate change. They are the fact that we have built in areas that are very dangerous, that people have not, you know, hardened their own homes. And so it's not an easy conversation, but, you know, we're all on the hook regardless, and we need electricity.
Well, let me go to Dan in Santa Clara. Dan, join the conversation.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I don't understand why we're having this conversation again. Maybe your guests could explain to me why profits are privatized and liability and damages are made public. Thank you.
Dan, thanks. That is not, he is not alone in feeling this way.
No, I mean, this gets to the sort of basic structure of our investor-owned utility system. And I agree with the caller. I think we should take a hard look at that system and whether it's working. Again, I don't know that there's a political will to do that. But basically, you know, that's it is how it is set up. And at this point, it is the way PG&E operates and all these utilities is reliant on Wall Street lending them money to invest in these big infrastructure, you know, upgrades. And if we want to rethink that system, you know, that we would have to potentially break up one of the biggest companies in California.
Well, speaking of leadership and also protecting the public, as is clearly Dan's concern, can you shed any light on the head of the California Public Utilities Commission announcing at the meeting yesterday, Michael Picker, that he was going to step down? Was this expected? Was this a surprise? Lisa Pickoff White.
I mean, I think it's something that we've been hearing rumors of, certainly, that may happen. And to the last point, you know, we're talking a lot these days about whether we should have public power, what kind of utilities we should have. And we're also, I'm hearing a lot more talk about whether the California Public Utilities Commission itself, utility regulators, should be reformed. The governor had a plan last month that talked about some changes at the CPUC. And now this is a chance for Newsom to pick a new president for the CPUC. And that could really, I think, change things.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Picker was a Jerry Brown appointee. His term goes for a few more years, so it has to be his call to step down. But I think it's not surprising that potentially he would feel and the governor's office would feel that, like, it's time for new leadership and that Newsom would want his own person at the head there, especially as these really big questions are being broached.
Well, this listener writes, what percentage of California residents live in areas that could be affected by this?
A lot. I'm actually
Lisa Pickoff White.
Yeah. Quite many Californians live in fire hazard zones. We actually have a older map for Bay Area residents. So we'll have an updated one soon where you can check whether you live in a fire hazard zone. I mean, the thing that's changed and one of the things that was approved yesterday is that utilities will be able to shut down transmission lines. And those are these huge lines that power thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of customers. And so even if they shut down a transmission line, you may live hundreds of miles or very far from where a fire is, but you could still see your electricity going out. However, what we've seen, like I've said, in historical shutdowns is that often these are to smaller areas. And also the technology is really, really improving so that you can shut down now a couple blocks instead of, say, a whole city. But at the end of the day, it's the utilities who will get to decide whether or not they are shutting off your power. Now, they have to do a couple things. They're supposed to give first responders 2 to 3 days notice. And they're also supposed to give customers, especially people with disabilities, notices of 24 to 48 hours.
Well, and while their shutoffs in 2018 affected hundreds of thousands of customers, this is going to be potentially millions if you look at their overall service
area. I mean, we're getting
service
these notices
area.
In San Francisco, and that's because that there's a chance that they could shut down the transmission lines.
Exactly. So that's even in the East Bay, North Bay, or wherever. Uh-huh. Yes.
Right. So, and that will hit more urban areas that are not actually at the wildfire risk, but get the power via those places.
Well, let's hear from Thomas in the North Bay. Hi, Thomas.
Hi. I think that for myself, I would gladly give up my electricity for a day or two or more if it would have prevented a fire like the Tubbs fire, which I saw outside my girlfriend's window, or the fire in Paradise. I think that's a small price to pay, and it's one of the few smart things that PG&E has done. Now, if people are concerned about this, it's real important that you remember, if the people who can switch to solar did switch to solar, the impact would be huge. First of all, for them, they'd have electricity as soon as the sun came up the next day if they set it up that way. If they have a good battery system,
yes,
they would never lose it. And also, it minimizes the amount of control that this huge corporation, PG&E, has on everybody's life. Because if the more and more people have solar, that's less money they're giving to them and less control. It's putting the control back in the hands of the individual.
And Thomas, your comment is actually being echoed by another listener, Helena, who writes, or Helena, she writes, the more we invest in smart local mini-grids powered by community solar and wind projects, the fewer communities will need to lose power during a fire danger event. I wonder if there's anything in the long term, Lisa or Marisa, to think about other sources of energy for folks during these shutoffs.
Yeah, and I think that this is really trying to get at a short-term problem. That's what Bill Dodd said. You know, this is an idea that we need to do right now because we have not mitigated the fire risk more broadly. But as the system gets hardened, as communities hopefully get more fire safe, this should sort of drop down the menu of options to prevent fires.
And let me see if I can squeeze in Brian from Windsor. Quickly, Brian, join us.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to mention, I just drove through the fire areas in Santa Rosa where a lot of houses are being rebuilt. And the vast majority of them are being rebuilt once again with asphalt shingles instead of steel roofing and a lot of regular materials that are combustible. Mm-hmm. And nowhere near the care is being put in to put in materials that are going to stop or impede fire. And it's just, if you don't learn from history, you never go forward.
Brian, thank you. And you are underscoring this question of mitigation and who is responsible for these.
Right. So as angry as we all are at PG&E, I think we have to look at ourselves, too, and say, what can we do to prevent this from happening again?
And it's just such of a larger systematic issue, too. I mean, what we're talking about, the roofs, that's an insurance question to an extent. You know, will insurers pay for people to rebuild in a way that makes more sense? I mean, this is such a complicated and ongoing topic.
Lisa Pickoff-White, data reporter and senior producer, KQED. Thanks, Lisa.
Thank you.
And Marisa Lagos, politics correspondent for KQED. Thanks, Marisa Lagos.
Always a pleasure.
I am Mina Kim. Thank you so much, our listeners, for joining Forum today, and I hope you have a great weekend.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.